Good morning. Eric Musenberg on behalf of Prinko Corporation, Prinko America. May it please the court. The case presented today on this appeal presents a fundamental question, one which was not before the court in Phillips 1. And that is it permissible for patentees to combine substitute, non-complementary, non-blocking technologies in a patent pool covering a standard which itself defines as unusable one of those patents? I want to briefly elaborate on 5 points which I believe unavoidably leads us to the conclusion that it cannot be permissible. The first is that the Lagodec patent, the Sony digital patent, is a non-blocking substitute technology to the Rainmaker patent of Philips. Secondly, there are no pro-competitive benefits that are derived or accrued by the inclusion of the Lagodec patent in this pool. None could be found, and the commission found none. Third, there are serious antitrust and anti-competitive consequences to what Philips and Sony did here. Fourth, the leading treatise condemns the pooling of substitute patents as categorically condemning and a presumptive violation, as does the Department of Justice and case law and other cited authorities. Finally, unlike the optional, non-essential patents that were considered in Phillips 1, here the evidence supports and requires that a finding the Lagodec patent, the patent that cannot be used, was paid for. To my first point, it's important to keep in mind that the technology at issue here, the digital Lagodec solution and the analog Rainmaker solution, Sony and Philips respectively, began clearly as substitutes. They were, their life commenced as efforts to solve a single problem. How do you encode data, control data on a blank disk so that it doesn't interfere with data that might be recorded down the road by a subsequent buyer?
But Mr., what exactly is the anti-competitive effect?
The anti-competitive
that's been found by the commission.
The commission found no anti-competitive effects, and that is the problem. They failed to recognize the anti-competitive effects, and I believe there are 3 anti-competitive effects. The most conspicuous, of course, is that by pooling these patents in the manner that Philips and Sony did, and then to write a specification that rendered one unusable, clearly that technology was put in the deep freeze, never to be utilized, never to be deployed, never to be developed. That sort of suppression of technology and innovation is a specific anti-competitive effect.
But you're arguing exactly what the investigating attorney was arguing. Particular points that he raised
before
the commission.
I believe he did identify those 3 anti-competitive effects. So that one, that's correct.
And the commission said those are not anti-competitive. They made a specific finding of anti-competitive on those 3 points.
Well, the error with what the commission did with regards to substitute technologies is they fell into the trap of accepting that by defining the specification as in a manner that excludes one of the patents, it's therefore non-usable, therefore there's no anti-competitive effect. It did not consider, as I could tell, the specific issue of whether or not that could be used in other contexts. But it made the mistake of allowing a per se presumptive violation identified by the Department of Justice and by ARETA, the pooling of substitute patents, to be cured by drafting a specification that excluded one of those.
When you say drafting a specification, you're talking about the Orange Book?
That's correct. The Orange Book specification was drafted in such a manner that it did not permit the use of one of the patents in the pool.
But what you have also is a finding by the commission that the Lagodec technology wouldn't work, basically, don't you?
Well, a couple points. First, there was no finding that it didn't work. One of the witnesses, 17 years after the fact, testified that there were problems with it. The contemporaneous evidence that we've submitted shows that there were problems with both. However, Areta speaks directly to this point, saying we are not going to concern ourselves with whether or not a technology is inferior or superior. When they are pooled in this manner, even an inferior patent may later become the dominant technology. What was identified as prone to error, a quote which is copiously cited in the briefs by the appellees, was a comment about the technology presented in 1986 when this issue was first presented to Philips and Sony. The Lagadec patent issued 4 years later after a patent application was submitted in Japan and two patent applications were submitted in the United States. The specific area where there was some suggestion that there might be issues, namely the interference at the low end and high end of the frequencies, there's evidence in the issued patent that those were resolved. So there's no question or suggestion that the Lagadec patent, that which was pooled, and that which was the cause of the anti-competitive consequences, had any errors or didn't work.
Well, did you put in evidence that it could have been developed? I mean, it's true that, you know, often, even when you get to the point of a patent, that you necessarily frequently have to take further steps to commercialize it, to solve problems that may exist, that may be outside the claim limitations. That's not uncommon. But did you put in evidence that the Lagadec technology could have been developed as an alternative to the Orange Book standard?
Well, my answer comes in a couple different forms. One, as a result of the combining of these patents, these substitute patents, Philips and Sony prohibited the opportunity for the Lagadec to actually be commercialized. It couldn't be used inside the pool.
Well, I understand that, but I guess what I'm asking is, to the extent that the ability to commercialize it is a central issue here, if it is a central issue, who has the burden on that point? Do you have the burden to establish that it could have been commercialized? Does the commission have the burden to show that it could not have been commercialized? Who has the burden? Because the record's pretty thin on this one.
If the question is, would there have been, is there some suggestion that this technology would have been successful in the marketplace? This requirement comes from the portion of Areta that's cited by both the commission and the appellees that deals not with the pooling of competing technologies, but with mergers of conglomerations and corporations, where here there is a requirement, there's a need for some speculation about what might happen in the future. But as Areta points out, when you're talking about two technologies who do the very same thing, they have no fate other than to compete.
That sounds to me as though that's an argument that the burden was on the commission or on Philips to show that the thing could not have been commercialized.
That's correct. If we were talking about a merger, it might have been different. But here there's a presumptive anti-competitive effect by pooling two competitive patents that could have no fate other than to compete.
And on that basis, then your argument for a per se type of a rule instead of a rule of reason, isn't that a little mushy type of an analysis when you start pushing into the per se area?
Well, we don't believe it gets that far because the authorities that we cited, including the case law as well as Department of Justice and Areta, says it is a per se violation to combine substitute technologies. That is exactly where we are. And we believe that ought to resolve it. There is literally no excuse, no explanation, no legal sanctuary that this conduct could be found.
But wouldn't you have to show that the other technology or the digital technology that's covered by the DEEP would be competitive and where the competition would arise and why it is competitive and establishing that competitiveness with a separate marketplace?
No, and here's why. And again, the authorities speak directly to this point. When you're talking about corporations merging, there is this sense of speculation of what might happen in the future, and a requirement that the party alleging an antitrust injury show that there's a reasonable chance they compete in a reasonable amount of time. But when we talk about the combination of patents, particularly in a standard-setting environment, by their nature, they will have never made it to the market. That's how standard setting environments work. Patents are are assembled before any typically go to market and decisions are made. So it cannot be a burden on the party who has been injured to show that they would have competed or would have competed. And indeed, the Areta citations in the Department of Justice never used that language. This was in a case that we believe is very similar. Is very similar. In Ray Cardism, the court in footnote 14 said the issue is not would have. The question is could have. And when you're talking about patents designed to do the exact same thing, the could have issue is resolved. That's their only fit.
You're into your rebuttal time. Would you like to say it?
I would like to say it. Thank you.
You're dividing your time, I think. Is it 8 minutes and 7 minutes? Is that correct?
That's correct. Sure. May it please the court. Your Honor, in their reply brief, Prinko argues...
I read the commission's decision here, and I don't understand one part of it. And that is that they say, well, we don't have to worry about whether the Langedeck technology is competing because it's not competing within the Orange Book standard. It's an alternative technology. That strikes me as rather strange. That can't be the test. The test is whether it provides an alternative to the Orange Book, not that it provides an alternative within the Orange Book standard.
Well, the commission didn't stop with the final.
No, I understand that. Let's stick with what it did say. I mean, that's just wrong, isn't it?
Well, it's correct that the first finding was that Langedeck and the can't compete with the other patents in the pool to make Orange Book technologies.
What's that have to do? I don't understand.
Well, they're not competing within.
I mean, the point is, the argument is that Langedeck is an alternative to the Orange Book technology. The fact that it doesn't offer a competitive alternative within the Orange Book technology seems to be rather irrelevant.
Well, the second part of that, Your Honor, is that in order to be that went on and said that they weren't even a potential competitor. And the argument first that the parties made was that...
But you're not addressing my question. My question, I understand the idea that it may not be commercially practical, and that seems to be a relevant issue. But the commission's suggestion that it could ignore Langedeck because it didn't offer an alternative within the Orange Book standard is just the wrong focus, isn't it?
Well, I can understand that you're saying that that's insufficient, which is true, and that's why we said it wasn't not only... Well,
the concern is because it does allegedly provide an alternative to the Orange Book standard. The point is not that it provides an alternative within the Orange Book standard.
The first point has to be, right, it would have been if the Langedeck patent was actually usable as part of the Orange Book standard, and they had put two patents that actually were substitute ways of doing the Orange Book technology in the same pool, that would have raised the question. It wouldn't necessarily be per se, but it would have raised the question. So that's like the first thing. That is an issue there. But in this case, right, Langedeck couldn't be used to make the Orange Book standard. So that's why you have to look, that's why you have to consider the next part. Is it a potential competitor? Is it possible that the Langedeck standard could have been used into an alternative, another way of making products that is like not an Orange Book standard? Would there have been some kind of, is it a potential competitor that way?
Okay,
so we had to look at both of those.
The last point, there isn't a finding, is there, that the Langedeck technology could not have been developed as an alternative?
The commission...
We have a finding that there were problems with it, but there's no finding that the problems could not be solved.
Well, let's look at that, Your Honor. The findings, there are a bunch of findings of fact on the Langedeck patent, and they're in the initial determination at A469-71, and those findings were adopted by the commission in an unreviewed portion of the ID back in December 2003, and Prinko cannot contest them now. And the first one, FF94 on A471, states, Because the approach in the Langedeck patent has only one area in the code where a distinction is made between a 1 and a 0, the measurement is prone to errors and decoding is difficult to carry out. Finding of fact 97. The low frequency components cannot be filtered out of the Langedeck patent because those components are necessary to encode the position information. Finding of fact 93. The approach described in the Langedeck patent does not leave room for error detection and coding in the system. And others, findings of facts 92, 95 to 96, pointing out that in the Langedeck approach, there are frequency components that interfere with the velocity control. And these findings are not only adopted by the commission and things that they can't challenge, but
don't those findings stop short of saying that those problems could not have been solved? I mean, every time there's a competing technology that's patented, and there are frequently problems that need to be solved before you can bring the technology to market. And I don't see a finding here that the problems that were identified could not have been solved in bringing the technology to market. And I would be happy to be corrected if I'm wrong about that.
Well, I can suggest that you review those particular findings. And also, the burden of proof of misuse is on Prinko in this case. And so the idea, I think, that the commission has to... Prinko has made these allegations of patent misuse, and they ought to be forced to prove all of the factual... I mean, that's their burden to carry, I would say, on all the subsidiary factual issues as well.
And you said the commission, I guess it's footnote 20, refers to what the commission concludes as the response failure to produce evidence that Langedeck approach is commercially viable.
Yes. That's in the commission's opinion. That's right.
Is it correct to say that you can meet the Orange Book requirements without using Langedeck's technology?
Can you meet the Orange Book requirements without using Langedeck technology? What the commission found was that there was no misuse either way, whether Langedeck, if Phillips was correct that Langedeck was technically blocking, then there would be no patent misuse. But if the ALJ was correct that about his interpretation of Claim 6 of the Langedeck patent, then there's also patent misuse. And there was basically, you know, the commission's opinion was rebutting all of the allegations, I mean, all of the patent misuse that flowed from the ALJ with respect to the Langedeck, assuming the ALJ's interpretation of the claim. But no,
you didn't answer my question.
Well, we didn't. I'm sorry.
If a disk is manufactured,
yes,
under the requirements of the Orange Book,
right,
can it be done without using the Langedeck technology?
That would be a question about whether or not. See, it kind of goes to the scope of
the claim. The answer is the commission didn't decide that question, isn't it?
Well, that's what I was trying to say about the claims, the scope of Claim 6. But if, depending on what, if you interpreted Claim 6 broadly so that it included both digital and analog technology, then you have a problem there. But if you interpreted it narrowly the way the ALJ did, then you would not. And the commission basically did not make a decision on the scope. It said there would be no patent misuse either way.
And no one has challenged that decision. So basically what we're saying is that you can manufacture a disk without necessarily using Langedeck technology.
But you might infringe Langedeck. So that's, I guess that's what's confusing. Depending on the scope of Claim 6.
Not if it's interpreted to mean only digital.
Right. If it's only if you only digital, you can definitely do it without. Yes.
Okay, well,
good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Jonathan Cedarbaum from Phillips Electronics. I'd like to pick up on a number of the issues that Mr. Wietzenberg raised and that the Court questioned about. First of all, about the issue about whether the Langedeck was taken off the market and put in the deep freeze. It's clear from the evidence that there was no taking of the Langedeck off the market. There are two authorization agreements in the record, one with respect to CDR and one with respect to CDRW. The CDR agreement, which is made up of the two letters from 1993, did not apply to the Langedeck, because the Langedeck was not in the CDR joint list until much later, 2001. And there was a patent list attached to the letter in that CDR agreement, and it did not include the Langedeck. With respect to the CDRW, the authorization agreement is expressly non-exclusive. Article 2.01 of the CDRW authorization agreement, which can be found at Joint Appendix page 83377, makes clear that the authorization is non-exclusive. So there was no taking.
But we have no finding on this point by the commission, right?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. I think that what the commission found was that Krinko, among other things, had failed to show that the pool licensors would have competed, that the pool licensors would have competed absent the pooling arrangement.
No. But on the exclusivity question, whether the Langedeck patent could be licensed outside of the pool, there was no finding on that question, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. The ITC did not make a specific finding on that point, but clearly it made the more general point that there was no showing by Krinko that that but for the licensing arrangement, Philips and Sony would have competed.
Well, I understand that, but if we were to conclude, for example, that the question of whether the Langedeck patent could be licensed outside the pool was important, whether Sony and Philips had agreed that it could only be licensed within the pool, if that were a simple question in our view, we should send that back to the commission, shouldn't we, to have them address that in the first instance, rather than our trying to make a finding of fact about it?
No, Your Honor. I think, again, the issue there is simply the burden of proof. It was up to Krinko to prove that point. And I think the record refutes them, but the point is that they failed on that point to put in evidence showing the exclusivity that they are saying is essential. If I may, I also just wanted to turn to what Mr. Wiesenberg identified as the central issue here, which is that Krinko is urging a new per se rule here. He was very candid about that, and he urged that the Areta Treatise and the antitrust enforcement authorities support this new per se rule. But in fact, all those authorities are to the contrary. First of all...
Well, would there be a per se rule if there was an agreement between Philips and Sony not to license the Langedeck patent apart from the pool? Would that be appropriate to address as a per se question?
If Sony and Philips had, in fact, agreed not to compete outside the Orange Book, again, even there, Your Honor, there would have to be some evidence that the Langedeck was a genuine competitive prospect. After all, Langedeck is just one functionality. For the Langedeck to compete in any...
Well, if we assume that it was a commercially possibly competitive technology, and if we assume that Sony and Philips agreed that it couldn't be licensed outside of the Orange Book pool, that would be a per se antitrust violation, wouldn't it?
Not quite, Your Honor. I think there's at least one more step that would be required. And that goes a little bit back to your question, I think, about why the commission mentioned the significance of the Langedeck not competing within the pool. And that is, Krinko here insisted that the only relevant market was the Orange Book licensing market. It never bothered to define, let alone put in evidence about this larger Orange Book plus Langedeck other standard market, in which it said there might have been this other competition. For there to be some per se rule, we have to know what that other relevant market was and what the competitive situation was in that market. Because if it turned out that larger market, which Krinko vigorously argued against below, was one in which Philips and Sony were not significant players to begin with, there might well be no basis for a per se rule. So there are several steps before I think one can get to a per se rule. Each one of those steps is not present in this case. To go back to the per se issue, though, if I may, Your Honor, I don't want to leave you unsatisfied. But the Supreme Court has many times said that per se rules are disfavored in this context. This court has said that it will not adopt a per se approach here unless the Supreme Court has itself already adopted a per se approach to the specific licensing arrangement at issue. And of course, the Supreme Court has not adopted an approach to this arrangement. On the contrary, this court, with the exact same licensing agreements before it in 2005, found that they had pro-competitive virtues and a per se approach was inappropriate. But with respect to the particular per se rule argued by Krinko, there are additional flaws.
Would there be any economic efficiencies achieved by an exclusive licensing arrangement between Sony and Philips to refuse to license the Langedeck outside of Orange Book standard if, in fact, Langedeck was a commercially viable alternative? Would there be any economic efficiencies, any justification for doing that, any benefit for doing that?
Well, yes, Your Honor, there would still be some of the benefits that were identified by this court in its 2005 decision. Remember, as this court emphasized...
We aren't addressing the exclusivity situation.
No, I understand, but I think some of those pro-competitive benefits would be there nonetheless, because we're still talking about looking ex ante at joint developers of a single technology, not poolers who take patents that they had separately and were already out in the world competing and put together. This is not really a pool in that sense. This is a joint development effort. And they have to figure out which patents go in and which patents don't.
Well, that's an argument for economic efficiency for including the Langedeck patent within the license pool.
Yes, sir.
And I understand that argument. What I don't understand is what economic efficiencies are served by making it exclusive.
Again, Your Honor, there was no exclusive.
No, I understand. Just go with me.
Yes.
Hypothetically, assume that it was exclusive. Are there any economic efficiency justifications for making it exclusive?
For making it exclusive with respect to some larger market other than the Orange
Book? Yes.
I cannot think of any at the moment. But to come back to the per se rule that the Prinko is urging on the court now, I see my time is up.
Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say, two points there. Prinko presses very heavily on the Areta treatise, but if you look at Areta section 707A, which is the beginning of the section that Prinko relies on, 707, footnote 1, it refers to the National Cooperative Research Act, which concerns joint development efforts like this, and notes that that statute requires rule of reason treatment. And it says, no problem, because our analysis is the same. So Areta is endorsing rule of reason, a rule of reason approach to the circumstance that Prinko is pointing to. But, you know, put aside the fact that we think that's the wrong analysis, we think that the potential merger, potential competitor merger, is the more appropriate framework. But even with respect to the Areta framework they use, Areta endorses rule of reason. And also the DOJ antitrust guidelines for licensing IP, the 1995 guidelines that they also point to. They point to section 5.1, exhibit 9, at page 25. But that very example, example 9, defines substitutable as permits the manufacturer at comparable cost to consumers of products that consumers consider interchangeable. So there, substitutable doesn't mean just technical alternatives. It means commercially competitive alternatives out in the marketplace. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Could you add an extra minute to the time for the rebuttal? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You have 5 minutes and 30 seconds.
Thank you. A couple quick points. One, there is no evidence in the record suggesting this is joint development. To the contrary, the evidence is crystal clear that the Sony team, the Sony engineers developed Langedeck, the Philip engineers, Rainmaker Technology, developed them separately, independently. They're patented separately. No evidence about the notion that this is a joint development. Both the ITC and Philips fall back again on the but-for argument. But for the agreement, would there have been competition? And that is simply not the test. And I refer you to the Indre Cardozim case, as well as the scholarly treatises of Areta and the Department of Justice. And it cannot be the test. This is a senseless road to go down in this environment. When they talk about potential competitors, you'll note that their cite to Areta is from the 1100 sections, 1121 and 1128. Again, these are dealing with corporate mergers. There's a particular specific treatment of combining substitute patents in Areta, 707 and 70B, that Areta is crystal clear on. And again, let me just identify that section 707, Areta describes this as presumptively should be an exclusionary practice. Section 708 says we would categorically condemn the patentee who acquires a competing technology from another and shuts it down. Precisely what was done in this circumstance. Secondly, the court is correct. There was no finding on exclusivity. But to the extent there's any relevant evidence in the record, it is to the effect that indeed it was exclusive. The 2000 agreement
You say to the extent that there is evidence in the record suggests that the record is not very good on that point.
The record is not very good.
Is it your burden to make the record on exclusivity?
No, it's our burden to make the defense of patent misuse. And when we assert that there's patent misuse by the combining of non-blocking substitute technologies in a patent, and then in a pool, and then the specification is written in a manner that renders one unusable, as I said, put in the deep freeze, that is condemned as per se misuse. Now, if we want to go into a rule of reason analysis, there's other
What's the evidence of exclusivity? It's just these contracts that you point to?
There is a 1993 agreement, an authorization agreement, which points out that Philips has exclusive rights to license the technology from Sony, and that any inquiries to Sony must be referred to Philips. And Sony is prohibited from licensing its technology, but for broad cross-licenses. In this situation, all the cards are in Philips' hands, all of them. The 2000 agreement that Philips' counsel referred to is after the fact. The misuse had commenced when Prinko signed this license in 1999. If they changed the terms of their relationship with Sony later, that's of no consequence here. But you're correct. There was no finding on this point, and Chenery would prevent this court from sustaining the commission on that ground. There's also a suggestion that we're trying to create a new, novel, per se rule. And let me point to a section of the Department of Justice guidelines that the commission relies heavy on and is quoted in both of the appellee's brief. And it points out that in the absence of evidence, and this again is from the same example that Philip's counsel referred in the absence of evidence enhancing efficiency, enhancing integration from the joint assignment of patent rights, the agency may conclude that the joint marketing of competing patent rights constitutes horizontal price fixing and could be challenged as per se unlawful. And there is no efficiency enhancing benefits by including in a pool a patent that cannot be used. Indeed, as Philips One correctly pointed out, as a general proposition, patent pools do have advantages and benefits. Here, the commission found none. They found no benefits accruing by the inclusion of the Lagedec, and they could not. And you know the list of the possibilities. There's no risk of avoiding litigation as it couldn't be used. No benefit from technology you might want. That changing technology might render something essential one day, non-essential the next. The specification was written to expressly exclude this technology.
But doesn't the fact that the manufacturing of a CD disc could be made under the ARM Cook specifications without using the Lagedec technology, how does that impact your argument?
It's of no consequence. Sure, a CD can be made under the Orange Book.
So but that Lagedec is then not necessary.
That's correct. It's not only not necessary, it can't be used, but therein lies the injury. It's suppression of technology. This is an issued patent. One must presume that it's operative. To say now that the patent in 1990 suffered from the problems of a preliminary discussion in 1986, that's not supportable, and even if it was, Arita speaks directly to this issue, that you can't make these subtle distinctions about inferior and superior technology.
How does that comply with Philips 1? Is that outside of the Philips 1 position?
It absolutely is. It is outside the Philips 1 discussion. Philips 1 was focused on optional, non-essential patents. Here we're talking about an unusable substitute technology. It's completely different. We do not quarrel with Philips 1, and this appeal is not meant to draw into question any finding in Philips 1.
It all depends on how we interpret Claim 6.
Well, again, Chenery says you can't do that. The commission expressly made no finding on Claim 6.
I understand that, but is it dependent upon Claim 6 interpretation at that point?
Whether or not it's usable or unusable? It could turn on how broadly that's established, yes, but there's no evidence at all to suggest that it could reasonably be interpreted that way.
No, there is evidence that it could reasonably be interpreted that way, right?
Well, Philips has taken the position to the contrary in this proceeding.
That Lagedec had a witness who came in and said it could reasonably be interpreted to be a blocking patent.
This witness was a paid consultant for Philips for over a decade, and His testimony was incomplete, and it was before the fact. It was incomplete that he did no infringement analysis. He did some suggestion of a claim scope analysis, but even that is incomplete. But his analysis was done in 2001, years after the 1986 agreement, the way the specifications were written, and the inclusion of Lagedeck in the pool. The harm was done. For them to say they reasonably relied upon an event years later because a paid consultant told them that one of the patents was usable, I think, has no merit. It doesn't have any, shouldn't have any weight.
Thank you. Our case is submitted.
Could you give me like 30 seconds just to respond to Dyke's last question when I said I had no answer, but I...
Well, if you want to submit something further, you can do so by letter if you have one. And you will have to respond to the one that you take issue with or something.
Thank you.
And if you don't, let it more. Very well. We'll hear argument next in Procter & Gamble against Kraft Foods, number 2008-1105.